You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire.
UK voters take their country out of the EU. Who predicted Brexit and how when the smart money was on Bremain? Fancy Bear and Cozy Bear don't look like a lone hacker, but they do strike one Oppo researcher as Lazy Bear. Ghost Squad goes after the US military, and US Cyber Command goes after ISIS. Ransomware continues to pursue businesses and individuals. Some old threats return, Conficker among them. Investigations into U.S. State Department emails continue, enabling technologies for the IoT, and keep calm and carry on. I'm Dave Bittner in Baltimore with your CyberWire summary and week in review for Friday, June 24th, 2016. The big news today is, as we expected, that the UK voted yesterday to exit the European Union. The vote means that Prime Minister Cameron's government will be out by October at the latest. The decision to leave the EU will have far-reaching policy and market implications for cybersecurity as well. We'll talk a bit later with the CEO of Expert System, the company whose research into social media trends called the vote for Brexit when most other prediction markets, even the betting shops, had the smart money on Bremain. In that other political story on this side of the pond, consensus is firming up that the DNC wasn't hacked by a lone hacktivist. Signs still point to Moscow. A former DNC researcher thinks Fancy Bear and Cozy Bear don't know much about opposition research. He would make Lazy Bear the third bear in this story. Ghost Squad hacktivists, largely associated with anonymous operations like Op Icarus against governments and banks, offers ISIS support by releasing a database containing personal data of U.S. military personnel. This support is at least objective, if not actually coordinated, and some observers regard the list as effectively another ISIS hit list. HackRead said the data looks legit. The release comes as U.S. Cyber Command takes an increasingly active combat support role against ISIS. 46 of the command's mission support teams are reported to be fully operational, 59 are at initial operational capability, and there are another 28 still to be organized. They're currently supporting U.S. Central Command in its operations against ISIS. Some observers of that effort recommend that anti-ISIS information operations against the self-proclaimed caliphate's online echo chamber be specific, granular, and tightly crafted for its audience. An expert from the International Center for the Study of Radicalization, the ICSR, at King's College in London recently characterized the members of that audience as, quote, what we call the cheerleaders and fanboys and wannabes, people who aren't actually members of ISIS, who aren't actually in Syria, but are essentially freelance supporters, often based in the West. They are the ones who are giving the group its online oomph, end quote. In the world of cybercrime proper, Neutrino is serving cryptex to visitors of anime site JCanime. The campaign mostly affects users in Latin America, particularly in Mexico. Ransomware remains the most worrisome form of cybercrime affecting enterprises, but older threats persist too. Lizard Squad may have subjected another gaming site to a DDoS attack. This time the affected game is, for no discernible reason, Overwatch. The venerable Conficker remains the number one malware family. The Neku's botnet, used to spread Drydex and Locky, is back after a 3-week hiatus. We attended the Cyber 7.0 conference this week, and a report is up on our website. The conference was concerned primarily with the Internet of Things and critical infrastructure. Today we have as our guest someone who will tell us about a key enabling IoT technology, low-power wide-area networks. Matthew Knight is a security researcher with Bastille Networks. He recently gave a presentation on low-power wide-area networks at the Jailbreak Security Summit.
Currently, we have 25 billion devices connected to the Internet in some way, and they project that by 2020, there are going to be 50 billion devices connected to the Internet in some way. Some of the buzzier things that you'll hear about in the media today are the quote-unquote IoT devices. You're talking about your smart refrigerators, your smart door lock, all these different IP cameras, you know, things that would survey your home. On the more industrial side, you have some SCADA applications. That's like industrial control, tracking. You might have like vehicle fleet monitoring as an example of a wide range roaming application. You know, today, a number of those devices are connected via wires. You know, you have power, of course, but when I say connected, I'm referring to Ethernet. But a lot of them are wireless too. And, you know, we're talking about things like cellular devices, which, you know, ultimately wind up getting into the Internet in some way. When we look at that 50 billion in 2020, fewer and fewer of those devices are going to be wired every year. So we're seeing this broad proliferation of wireless networks that are standard ones like Wi-Fi and cellular, but also some new emerging less standard technologies.
On the industrial side, many devices connect using the older 2G cellular network. It's cheap and offers wide coverage, but its days are numbered.
2G has kind of worked its way in as this very popular interface for a number of these IoT applications. However, AT&T and a number of the other domestic 2G carriers have announced that they're sunsetting those networks at the end of this year. They want to repurpose that spectrum for some of their more modern technologies. The 2G standard is very old at this point. So they're going to be turning those towers off and using them for something else.
This opens up opportunities for low-powered wide-area networks.
The best way to describe it is it's just like cellular data service, but optimized for IoT and low-bandwidth applications. So when I say it's just like cellular data service, it's a very similar network architecture. You have a network of base stations. In LPWAN terminology, they're often called gateways. And then you have end nodes that connect directly to that network of gateways via this wireless interface.
LPWANs have the advantage of enjoying much lower startup costs, in large part due to the type of RF spectrum they use.
Cellular base stations operate on restricted spectrum. You have to own the rights to operate on it in order to legally transmit. And the FCC regulates that. Now, there exist a number of pieces of spectrum that are referred to as ISM spectrum. It stands for Industrial, Scientific, and Medical, if I am getting that acronym correct. That is what is referred to as unlicensed spectrum. Basically, what that means is you're allowed to transmit in it so long as you're abiding by certain rules and principles without having a dedicated use license from the FCC. And that's the sort of thing that Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, those are all in the 2.4 gigahertz ISM band. And, you know, when you go to Best Buy and buy a router, you don't have to immediately send off to the FCC for permission to use it. It's compliant with the FCC's ISM rules, so you're allowed to just take it out of the box and plug it in a minute. These low-power wide-area network technologies that are gaining the most steam all operate in the ISM bands, which means that in order to become a network operator, you do not need to own a spectrum license, which is really profound because that takes out an enormous cost of putting up a network.
Of course, there's a downside to using unlicensed spectrum. It can be crowded and noisy with lots of interference.
Not only is there the potential for it, it's virtually guaranteed that you're going to have all sorts of collisions and all sorts of interference in these unlicensed bands. And the way that they address that is through their PHY layer technology. They've designed the PHY, that is the lowest level, the lowest definition of the electrical specification, to be very resilient to interference. So they have a number of very interesting technologies there that give it a very strong link budget, that is its ability to extract signal from noisy channels and also contributes to its range.
As manufacturers bring LPWAN products to market, some of their performance claims are quite impressive.
There's one LPWAN called Sigfox that advertises 10 years on a single AA battery, which is, you know, quite dramatic. I haven't tested that, but that's what they're claiming. And in terms of range, LoRa, the technology that I've spent a bit of time looking at, advertises up to 13.6 miles. So the performance is pretty dramatic. The way they get that performance is by trading on other aspects. Both of these protocols are fairly low data rate, and they're designed to duty cycle very aggressively. That means they're designed to sleep for the vast majority of their lifetime.
Matthew Knight says there's a lot of excitement and innovation going on in the space, including some unconventional applications.
Actually, I was at an event recently, and I met a guy who was developing LoRa-connected rat traps. Those are, you know, exactly what it sounds like. They're devices that would go in your wall and try to take care of a pest problem. But he wanted to know when if they were being effective or not. So now whenever it catches a rat, it will send a message up over LoRa and let them know.
As a security researcher, Knight is interested in potential vulnerabilities of these systems.
Some of these low-power wide area networks are uplink only, meaning they can only send messages up and they can't receive messages down. And one of the effects of that means that they cannot wirelessly receive firmware. So if there's a bug that they're deployed with, they will have that until somebody physically goes there and either updates it manually or replaces the device. So there is the opportunity for some of these vulnerable devices to become entrenched for quite a long time.
That's Matthew Knight from Bastille Networks. He recently gave a presentation on LPWANs at the Jailbreak Security Summit. You can download his slides from that presentation at the Jailbreak website. Investigation into email security at the U.S. State Department continues as more emails come to light revealing the department's temporary lowering of its spam filters to enable its networks to receive email from former Secretary Clinton's private server. The former secretary's concern, as expressed in contemporary emails, was to avoid any risk of the personal being accessible.
Hey everybody, today I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its zero-trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust Plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zero-trust-AI. The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business.
And I'm pleased to be joined once again by Malek Ben Salem. She's the R&D Manager for Security at Accenture Technology Labs. Malek, I know something you wanted to share with us was your take on software-defined security. What can you tell us about that?
Correct. Let me start by saying why we need software-defined security. Then I'll talk about what is software-defined security as an approach. Recently, we've seen a new move move or a significant move by companies transforming their IT infrastructure into software-defined infrastructure. And that includes software-defined networking, software-defined storage, server virtualization, or what is known as software-defined computing, basically creating software-defined data centers. What this enables is that everything is provisioned, controlled, configured through software, which makes their IT environments very dynamic and agile. That in and of itself creates new security challenges. Security analysts cannot keep up with the rate of change in the IT infrastructure environment. And that is why we need a new security management mechanism. And this is where software-defined security comes in. Software-defined security basically is a new approach for security management that abstracts the security management from the actual physical attributes of security controls. Through this abstraction, it makes security controls independent from the underlying security appliances or hardware, and it makes security management more dynamic, more easily handled by security analysts.
So is this a matter of sort of setting up automation to be able to keep up with the velocity of what's happening on a software-defined network? Is it that sort of thing?
Yes, absolutely. Automation is absolutely one piece of it, but it's not just automation. It's also providing more scalability, decreasing the complexity of the security management so that you can create services for certain security functions that are independent of the hardware. Let's say a firewalling service. Regardless of the firewall that you have deployed within your infrastructure, all you need to configure is that firewalling service, which would be applied to all of your firewalls underneath, or an intrusion detection service. All of your security policies can be implemented at the software level, regardless of the underlying security appliances that you have within your infrastructure.
Malek Ben Salem, thanks for joining us.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
Returning to the Brexit vote, not only has the pound sterling plummeted in international currency markets, but stock markets in Britain, Europe, and the U.S. are also taking a beating as investors and speculators are spooked by the Brexit's many unknowns. For the cyber sector, few expect many, if any, changes in British cyber policy. There are concerns, shared with the larger tech sector, about the labor market. Brexit is expected to make labor less mobile and more expensive than it had been. Most prediction markets had been confident that British voters would cast their ballot to remain in the EU. That obviously didn't happen, and the betting shops in particular are working to explain how the smart money might have backed the wrong horse. It seems to have been either a case of counting money more than heads, more money was placed on Remain, but more punters went for Brexit, or else just one of those cases in which the long shot won. And here in Baltimore, we've seen that happen at Pimlico from time to time. We did hear from some people before the vote, however, who did get the prediction right. And since they did so through social media analytics, their work is of some cyber significance. Expert System, working with researchers at the University of Aberdeen, called the election for Brexit to us on Wednesday. Expert Systems CEO Daniel Mayer joins us to tell us what they saw and how they analyzed it.
In this case, we're using a particular cognitive computing technology called text analytics to process social media. This technology recognizes concepts that are expressed in text, and it recognizes meaning. And what that boils down to is that it enables the computer to understand what we as humans are expressing. So for this particular study, we analyzed something like 50,000 tweets. I think in this case, we were maybe a bit lucky that some of the segments of the population that are using Twitter maybe were not as well represented in other instances. And I'm thinking particularly of the younger parts of the population, and also perhaps you could imagine that some of the most disenfranchised are maybe a bit more vocal on social media. So that could account for some of the differences in signals that you get from social media on one hand and maybe through other methods.
That's Daniel Mayer from Expert System. They've published the results of their analytics on their website and invite researchers and collaborators to take a look. Finally, our best wishes to our friends, colleagues, and listeners in the United Kingdom. Whatever the future looks like outside the EU, we trust you'll cope and thrive.
And that's the CyberWire. We are proudly produced in Maryland by our talented team of editors and producers. I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening.